Welcome to the Audible Ecstasy Podcast. Each week we sit around and discuss the music from our past. Sometimes we agree.
I call it iconic. It's a 10. That riff is it's incredible.
Clearly a 10. This is one of the most iconic songs of the 80s.
Iconic from start to finish.
And sometimes we disagree.
The song sounds like something you might hear at your aunt's funeral.
The absolute worst lyrics ever.
With the juvenile flush on that one, I'm not dealing with that. I'm not dealing with that crap.
Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
All right, guys, we are back with another Audible Ecstasy podcast, and this week we're taking a journey back in 1980 with Def Leppard's On Through the Night. Boys, y'all ready to do this?
I'm ready. Anthony, I'm assuming you have some words of wisdom since these are your boys here, so let's hear it.
It's the Audible Ecstasy podcast. Time to get wasted and get your rocks off.
Hey, yeah, you know what? You're on point today. I like it. We'll allow it.
Hey, man, I was sick last week, so I had a week.
Yeah, but it's okay.
I tried.
Things happened.
I tried.
No, you're good. Yeah, for those who don't realize, we did have to skip a week. Anthony was sick. He had lost his voice. He was down last week.
I was down.
And we just went ahead and took the week off instead of making him suffer through talking continuously for an hour and a half.
I was going to power through, but I'll get up that morning. I could barely talk. Nah, so
it's all good. You know what? We got it. We're back in form, and here we go. So let's get this party started, Chris. Let's start this off with track number one. It's called Rock Brigade. Hit it. So Rock Brigade is a nice intro to the band, and this is a little bit different lineup than what they become. We have a different guitarist in the band at this point in time, and I'll be honest with you, Willis is awesome. He's just an incredible guitarist, I think, but it gives a different journey or different soundscape for Def Leppard compared to what we get when Phil Collins joins the band. Nonetheless, I think that it's a nice intro, great way to start the album out. It's a standout drum performance. This is Rick Allen at his finest hour. This is when he is standing out. Easy guitar riffs throughout this song. I mean, it gets your head bobbing. It really is a great introduction to the styling of Def Leppard and what their interpretation of the new wave of British heavy metal was. Nice solo in this song. Excellent way to open the album. I'm at an 8. I think this is a great rocking tune. Chris, what'd you think about Rock Brigade?
Yeah, I echo a lot of your sentiments on that one. I will say, man, how bad does it suck to be Pete Willis? I mean, these guys just took off after this album. They kicked him out of the band.
Well, he kind of went out sucked, after man. High and dry, I think, is where he kind of went out on that one. So,
no, this from what I
think
I read,
this is
was,
his only album. Man.
I think he played album. Some.
He wrote songs on the next album.
He did. He had a little bit of influence on the next album. Not much.
They didn't tour with him on that, right?
No,
don't think so. But
I mean, right when they're taking off, he gets kicked out of this
band. He had a big drug
for alcohol, right? I mean,
he died
from alcoholism. How in the heck did
Steve
they kick
Clark
him
died
out?
From alcoholism.
How much worse was he than Steve Clark? I mean, I guess he's still alive. I don't know. Regardless, I'm
actually,
getting off on a tangent.
He did play on a lot of High and Dry, just so you know, Chris. He wrote a bunch of the riffs. I mean, he did play on the album. I don't know if he toured with him. I can't tell if he toured. Anthony, you might know that, but it looks like that was his last release recording with him.
It seems like he didn't do as much with them touring-wise, more on album-wise, but I could be mistaken on that. It's been a long time.
Yeah, poor Pete, man. Poor Pete.
It would suck to be that guy. To see what that became.
Because anyway, he was great, dude.
extremely good opening riff on this album. Great way to start an album, as far as I'm concerned. A very catchy chorus, something you can sing along to.
Yeah.
Great way to open an album. I gave it an 8 as well, man.
Fantastic. Excellent. All right, Anthony, what did you think about Rock Brigade?
Yeah, ready for my non-biased opinion?
Not at all.
Actually, you know, there's three songs on this album that I wish would have lived a lot longer beyond this album for Death Leopard. And this is one of them, Rock Brigade. I mean, it did get like the second highest played from this album for them. So that's a pretty good, pretty good little track record. But still, it was only like 400 plays or something like that. So nothing like the other songs. But, you know, man, it's a 9 for me. It's an outstanding tune. It's blasting off from the jump. I love the fast upbeat tempo, the drum fills, the vocals, the harmonies, the guitars. I mean, when Rick Allen had his two arms, man, this is what he could do as a drummer. And he was an amazing one-arm drummer, too. There's not many out there, but he's an amazing one. But as a two-arm drummer, this dude was, I think he was barely 19 when this came out, 19 around that time. He was like 15 when they got started. And he had to like sign waivers to get him to play in bars and stuff, you know, because that's how young he was. So he's a kid here, but he's killing on this album.
I think they're all teenagers at this album, aren't they?
Roughly.
They're all sub-20, right?
They're all.
I looked it up. Joe was 21 when he did.
Yeah, Joe was close to 20.
I was curious how. Yeah,
I didn't realize he was that old. I really thought they were all like fresh out of high school kids. You know what I'm saying?
Nah, I know. Rick's probably the youngest of them, I think.
I didn't even realize that. Hell, I thought they were all kids on this album. Still, yeah, you can't take any. You can't knock it. This is the start of something great for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move this up to track number 2. Hello, America, Chris. So Hello America, absolutely a great second song to follow up Rock Brigade. It keeps the power flowing, if you will, to rockin' song. This one stands out to my ears, and I can absolutely see why this song was chosen to be a single. There is a, if you listen to this song over and over again, you can hear what Def Leppard becomes in this song. It's got that pop flavoring with the keyboards in the background lightly there. The bass is thundering, just so you know. Savage is absolutely just riding the bass wave all the way through this song. I think it works extremely well. This is my favorite or second favorite song on this album. I love this. This might be against what you guys think, but man, I think this song is absolutely outstanding. It's a rocker, does not disappoint. I gave this one a 9. Chris, what'd you think about Hello America?
You know, every time I listened to this song, it felt so much like a Night Ranger song. Every time I'd hear it, it feels like Night Ranger when I'm listening to it. I do think the guys harmonize really well. That's one thing. Absolutely. That Def Leppard's, even since their formation, you can tell. These guys were great at harmonizing. Instrumentally, it's a solid song. I'll be honest with you, I thought the chorus was a little, I don't know.
I think about it this way. It's kids. That's what I was thinking the whole time. And they are rocking this out like they're trying to get a hit.
Yeah, they did rock it. I give them credit. That's true. I gave it 6. I think it's very good.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's anywhere near as good as Rock Brigade or the song after it, to be honest with you. But
really?
Yeah, okay. But that's just me. I mean, the chorus is just a little generic, I guess, is all. But like you said, they're kids.
Well, the kids sound great.
Instrumentally, it was very good. And Joe's vocals are good. I don't know.
Joe's killing the vocals.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Anthony, what do you think about Hello America?
Let's see. Wikipedia had a little bit of information on it, sort of scattered. It said Hello America is a 1980s song by Def Leppard. The lyrics and title of the song are about the fantasies the band had about touring in America, which makes sense. I think a lot of British bands are looking forward to cracking the States back in the day. The single's B-side, Good Morning Freedom, has only been released on CD in 2018 on the Rarities Volume 1 CD, which is part of the Collection Part 1 box set, which I don't think I've ever seen before. Maybe I'll seek that one out. And the song was featured on a BBC studio session recorded in 1979, and the show has since been bootlegged. Said a live version of the song was also included on Viva Hysteria, released in October 2013. It said Def Leppard have all but disowned On Through the Night, and Hello America was one of the first songs to leave the set list, having never been played live since the release of High and Dry. So
really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they kind of disowned
It's probably because it was child. It's kind of like their...
It's the metal thing.
It's like a kid hit. It has to be where it is.
They get their backs up, and people call them a metal band. And if they anything metal sounding to them, they get their backs up about it. They don't like being called a metal band. I've heard that before.
They did back
That's
in
not an
days.
Insult. No. I'm not sure why they never brought
I think they're more of a rock band or something like that. Or, you know, they were into sweet and glam rock and that stuff back in the day. So I think maybe that had something to do with it. But
interesting.
I mean, check my facts. I may be wrong, but that seems like it's what I heard somewhere along the way.
You know them better than us, man. I'll take your word for it.
The same thing.
And, you know, this song here, man, is another one of those I wish would have lived beyond the album. Hello, America. I've always thought it was a fantastic
I love it.
Song. It's a 9 for me. It's outstanding. I just love the way this one starts with the vocals and that no music. It's that Hello, America right at the start. It's just so, it's like, Hello, America, here we are. You know, I love that. Great way to lead a song in. And then we get that, you know, blasting off again. Leppard is, you know, pulling no punches. It's heavy, loud, upbeat, bombastic. I should use that word, shouldn't I? Everything I enjoy from them. I like that spot around the guitar so with the drums and the vocals. You know, that's a really cool too. And take a little trip out there. You know, that little part there is really cool. So just love the song. It's a 9. It's outstanding. So.
Okay, fair enough. I'm with you on that one 100%. Obviously, Chris didn't quite hear it that way, but we get it. I mean, I get it. I totally get it. So we're going to go to track 3, Sorrow is a Woman. Hit it, Chris. Guys, so Sorrow is a Woman. It's a bit of a slowdown, but the tone is absolutely new wave of British heavy metal. I mean, it's brilliantly hidden throughout this song. The bass line, hints of prog rock stylings of Yes. The guitar lines that ebb and flow throughout the song are absolutely fantastic. I think Steve Clark is one that's playing the solo line as Joe is singing. You know how there's a guitar line that's playing as Joe is singing throughout this song, and I do like that. I love that, actually. I mean, even though the song is not one of the faster tunes, musically, it's excellent. And it truly is in the signs of what's to come for Def Leppard. They are there. It's got an excellent guitar solo, leaving the song excellent as well. I gave this one an 8. Chris, what do you think about Sorrow as a Woman?
Yeah, I think it's one of my favorite songs on the album.
I can't argue.
Joe's firing on all cylinders. I love how much... You know, I think this is pre-Mutt Lange. I think Mutt probably focused more on Joe. I think probably whoever the producer for this thing was focused more on the musicians and let them all kind of balance it out. There were like multiple guitar solos on this song, and I just feel like it just flows very well. Rhythm section is just pushing it. Like you said, the bass guitar, the drum, and Rick, man, he's a hell of a drummer. He shines on this song. I give it an 8 as well. I think it's excellent. Excellent. Maybe my favorite song on the album. Yeah, I really like it.
All right, Anthony. Sorrow is a Woman.
I enjoy the sound of this one. Nice ebbs and flows. You know, Joe sounds awesome on vocals. The band is on point, digging the tune. I gave it a 7. I think it's a great tune, but I could go up to an 8 too. I mean, it was one of those songs where I was kind of balancing between 7 and 8, but I'll stick with the 7 at great. Keep my eyes, won't have to readjust my ratings, but I don't argue with an 8 either. It is an excellent tune, so.
Excellent, excellent. All right, guys. Well, let's move this up.
Let me interject here. I have to give you all credit. I looked at this Pete Willis. He got kicked off during the recording of Power Mania, so he was totally with them on Han Dry. That was my bad.
Okay. Yeah, I thought he was with them.
That's cool, man. Because I couldn't remember. I just know that his licks were there. I just know he played.
In case you're wondering, he left the music business in 2003 and runs a property management company in Sheffield. So.
He's still alive.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
He's probably still getting royalties.
He would be.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know what? Sure. With this and Han Dry, he probably gets decent little check every
Han
month.
Han Dry was a pretty solid album for him. So, yeah. But yeah, there was a controversy of that video. I think the Bringing On the Heartbreak, where I think it was like I think Willis might have played on it, but then Colin was in the band at the time, something like that.
That's correct. That is correct.
So the video you see Colin. But it might be actually be Pete Willis's stuff or something like that.
What I said. I thought that's what happened. I thought that he recorded his solos and Colin joined the band.
I think it's something like that. Yeah.
I was wrong. Obviously, he joined during Pyromania. So, wow.
But to add a little more to it, he was also, after he left Def Leppard, he joined a band called Gogamog. I don't know. with former and current members of Iron Maiden, it says. So,
wow,
he didn't completely drop off the.
Was that in the 90s or
was it 80s?
Blaze Bailey, maybe
85. They didn't last long. Let's see the numbers. You might know these guys' name. I don't know who the guys from Maiden would be. It's Paul Di'Anno.
Paul Di'Anno was a singer from Maiden.
Yeah.
Okay. Pete Willis, Janet Gears, Neil Murray, and Clive Burr.
Dude, they're 3 out of 5.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Actually, Yannick. Actually, Yannick Gears took the place of Adrian Smith when Adrian left the band in the 90s.
Right, and just didn't leave when they came back together with Bruce.
Now it's a 6-piece.
Yeah, it's great.
There you go.
Great.
So,
all right,
a little trivia this morning, folks.
A little trivia, yeah, exactly. Let's go to track number 4. It's called It Could Be You. So it could happen to you, or could be you. It is a nice little riff, and it's got a good pace change throughout the song. I do like that. I love how that solo. Pete Willis is absolutely tearing this thing up. I mean, he had great licks. He can certainly rip a damn fretboard apart. The song's a rocker. It can get your head bobbing. Man, Rick Savage, I'm going to say his name a lot tonight. His bass line is mean, and it holds that bottom end down throughout this entire tune. It's got a hint of punk rock in this song, I think. I think it's a great song overall. I gave this one a 7. Chris, what do you think about It Could Be You?
Don't hate me, guys.
Chris, come on. Wow. I knew there was going to be one on here somewhere.
Dude, there's a flush for me. It's a little later.
Well, it's not a bad song, honestly. And I didn't have too many extremely low scores tonight. But it does feel rushed to me. And it feels like Joe's kind of straining on his vocals on this one, too. Instrumentally, it's pretty good. But that's pretty much all I got to say on that one. I'd probably skip it most times if we're on the radio, if I'm being 100% honest. So I give it a 5. It's good.
Okay.
All right, well, you're wrong, you but still.
What did you think
the first time?
Not the first. True. You know, I love the octane in this one. Fast, loud, right in your face. I love the way Joe sounds on this one. He's just wailing away on vocals. The ebbs and flows, the way the drums and guitars play off each other. Chorus is solid, so is the guitar solo, man. I gave it an 8. I think it's an excellent tune. I'm digging this one, too. So kind of just turn it on, turn it up, and get lost in it. So
absolutely. All right.
Let's I feel like he strains some on this one, though. It just feels like he's straining on it.
I don't think so. I think he sounds great on it, but, yeah.
And for him to strain, he's got pretty high range to begin with. So.
That's why
back in those days, for sure.
Had a little trouble in concert these days because some of these songs are really high for a man.
Anthony, when we saw him, I remember, I've only seen him once, and I was with you. They play a song on this album. I remember you saying it was off this album, but I don't remember what the song was. Do you, off the top of your head?
I don't. Was that in the 88 Hysteria tour?
No, no, it was when we saw him down in Raleigh at the amphitheater down there.
But they played a song from this off at Raleigh?
I kind of remember you saying that this was off this album and you loved the song, but I can't remember what it was.
Unless it might have been Wasted.
It had, it almost had.
Or Rock Brigade.
Because I was there too, just so you remember. You bunch of turds.
Okay. Well, I didn't say you weren't, man. I just knew. Oh, okay. I remember Anthony like loving this song, so I was like,
okay. I was like, hang on a minute here.
Well, I don't remember one from this album. I remember one from maybe High and Dry, but I don't remember. No,
probably had more than one from High and Dry, didn't they?
Nah, they don't. High and Dry.
Didn't know if they could remember it.
Nah, I don't remember that.
That's all good.
I have to look it up.
Somebody look it up. All right, let's go to track number 5. It's called Satellite. Hit it, Chris. So I will say this on Satellite, it has a nice drum intro. They're really highlighting these drum skills. I mean, it's absolutely, it's just fantastic. And another solid riff. The song has absolutely the future of Def Leppard hidden all within this song. It really fits the styling and the sounds of the time. Nice aggression. Joe is truly finding his voice here. You can hear all his different ranges throughout this tune. Great guitar undertones throughout. The guitar playing grabs me and keeps my attention. The breakdown in the middle is a very good change of pace. It allows for that standout bass riff. And then onto a nice blistering solo. I think it's great stuff. Yet again, another great song. I gave this one a 7. Chris, what did you think about Satellite?
Yeah, instrumentally, really good. It's got a shredding guitar solo in it, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Man, Pete, that dude was good. I mean, I'm not sure how much, they got two guitarists here, and I don't know how much of it to give credit to Pete and how much to Steve. Do you guys know like who the more lead guy is on that, or do they take
according
turns?
They take turns, but according to the Wikipedia's got the breakdown of the solos, just so you know, and it actually tells you kind of who it does in most of the songs. Right. Clark is on a bunch. Willis is on a bunch. This one's got a mixture of Willis playing out the ride out licks, and Clark is the primary solo writer on the song.
Okay.
So it makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. It's a pretty good song. I mean, I gave it a 6. I thought it was very good. I don't know. It's a solid tune, but like it's better than the last one. And I thought there was a really good guitar solo in there. So
okay, fair enough. Anthony, what'd you think about Satellite?
I mean, it's a killer tune, man. I gave it an 8. I think it's an excellent. Again, I just enjoy the way this one comes in. And, you know, you get that get kind of a song that's kind of, like I said before, you turn on, let it play, and just get lost in, you know. And that's one thing I really love about this song. You're driving down the road, and you just turn it on and just crank the volume, and you're just drumming to the steering wheel and just singing along to it. And there's just not enough good songs like that in this world, man. We need more like this. So I love this song. So give it an 8. Excellent tune, man. So
David, an 8. All right. We'll move us up to track number 6. It is called When the Walls Came Tumbling Down. Chris?
Wait,
So when the walls came tumbling down, it's got this, it has a spoken intro and it kind of builds suspense for the song. The guitar breaks into a more powerful riff. That bass line is pure late 70s, early 80s, new wave of British heavy metal. But the song is it's suffering from something I can't put my finger on. It doesn't have what Def Leppard brings in most songs. This song, and y'all can argue this all you want, but I think Joe's voice is not hitting on all cylinders. It feels flat and or lazy during this song, and I don't know what it is. The song is good because of the music. Vocally, it just doesn't do it for me at all. My overall is a 5. This would be my flush. This is the worst song on the record. This is my worst song on the record, I should say. I gave this one a 5. I think it's good. Nothing more. Chris, what'd you think about When the Walls Came Tumbling Down?
Yeah, it's an interesting song for me. I don't know if you guys notice, and I don't really know how to describe this exactly, but there's a point in that song where it's kind of like, kind of when it gets into the chorus there, the tempo changes and it feels like it kind of like falls right into the pocket, right? Like there's like one point in this song where it just, I don't know if they kind of speed it up a little bit and it kind of like falls in the pocket when they do that. Do you guys know what I'm talking about in this song? I don't know how to explain it, to be honest. I did capture it in the clip there, but I don't know. It was interesting. This one actually kind of grew on me a little bit. I don't know, guys. There's a kind of gallop to it at times. A lot of tempo changes. I think the chorus is something that like gets stuck in your head when you listen to it. I gave it a 7. I think it's a great song.
Oh, wow. Anthony, what'd you think about When the Walls Came Tumbling Down?
You know, when I was listening to this week, I started thinking about Rush, that start. It has a very Rush vibe to it. And I was kind of curious if Rush was an influence on Def Leppard, which I'm sure they probably were. And I found this online. Here's what Joe had to say. I found it's on rushisaband.com. So it said, Joe Elliott says, "For people in our generation, they absolutely were career breakers. Rush broke England on All the World's a Stage. And for us growing up as a kid in England, these albums started people's careers off. Then you go back and get the studio albums and you listen to them and you go, oh dear, they're not as good as the live albums. I think that's what you hear first is what you get used to." So I'm not sure what that says about Rush, according to Joe Elliott, but still, apparently Rush was an influence on them a little bit. And I think that's where that intro comes in from, you know, because it's a very Rushy kind of intro. They do a lot of that kind of spoken word, like on Caress of Steel, they have a song where they actually stop and actually do a little story in the middle of it. You know, I don't know what song that is. I can't think of it. But anyways, that's what I was thinking of when I heard that intro again. I was like, you know, that's a very Rush intro. So just a little small tidbit, you know, I'm not going to change the world or nothing, but that was interesting. But beyond that intro, man, the song is, you know, rock solid. Leppard, even in their youth, knew how to make a catchy tune. This is another one. It's a 7 for me, too. I think it's a great tune. Okay. So.
Fair enough. You guys are wrong. Let's go to track number 7. It is Wasted.
Bottle of whiskey, slash heavy obstruction.
All right, guys. So Wasted, man, killer riff. It's probably the heaviest riff on this whole album. It's the best, maybe the best song on the album. It's really tough for me to call between this one and Hello America. Obviously, two singles. Nonetheless, I absolutely can see why Wasted was the first single. It's just balls to the wall. It is in your face riffage. One of the first riffs I learned how to play on guitar by Def Leppard back when I was a wee youngin'. I mean, it's not that it's difficult. It's an easy riff, but it's still a fantastic. Oh, it just fits so perfect for this style of music. I mean, it's fast-paced, catchy to my ears. I heard it many, many, many times over the years. Gets the head bobbing, and I love the pace. This song is absolutely outstanding. I gave it a 9. Chris, what'd you think about Wasted?
Back when you were a wee lad, eh? Yeah, well, Joe, if you're listening to this at any point, I'm going to say this is an extremely solid heavy metal song. I love it. Man, the riff on that is fantastic. That opening riff, it's the most rocking song on the album. I agree. I like that chanting nature of the chorus. Yeah. It feels like something that would do very well in concert. It's a shame they don't play these songs anymore, because this would have been a great one for a concert, I think.
You see where my complaints, even to this day. You see where my complaints now are coming from with some of these songs, whether they're not a greatest hits band. They've got a good catalog behind them, man.
Yeah, I know. I agree 100%. Yeah, it is the most rock song. Okay, this shows my ignorance. I was like, this is my sleeper of the night. I didn't realize this was a single. I didn't know the singles on this album. And I didn't go look it up.
It's going to show your ignorance here in a minute more, a little bit more too, in just a minute. So.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it sounds like it was their most popular song on this album. So, but yeah, man, I gave it an 8. I think it's an excellent song.
Awesome. All right, Anthony, what do you think about Wasted?
You know, Wikipedia said Wasted is a song by, you know, Def Leppard. It was released as a single, like you said, before the band recorded their album On Through the Night. So this came out before On Through the Night. The recording featured on the single is a different version from the On Through the Night LP. The B-side on the single is Hello America, which is also a different recording from the LP. These alternate single-only versions of Wasted and Hello America had never been released on CD until 2018, when they were included on as part of the Collection Volume 1 box set as the first two tracks of the Rarities Volume 1. So I think I might have to do some seeking out some of that stuff. I don't think I got that box set. I don't buy CDs anymore. I just stream everything. So maybe I need to go dig in the find that one today. But
what are you going to do? What, do you have a CD player? I mean, like.
Oh, we do. Yeah, we have
a CD player. I don't anymore.
We got one upstairs.
I don't know what I'd do with a CD if I had one.
We still got a DVD player, too. But
well, I got that, yeah.
Those are going away, too. But anyways, this song, man, is fire. It just cranks from the opening riff to the last. The harmonies, the chorus, the guitar licks, the drums. It's new wave of British heavy metal at its finest. Can't say enough good things about it. This is the other song that I think on this album should live beyond this album, Wasted. And I think it's a 10 for them. I think it's perfection. I think these boys were firing on all cylinders on this song. This is pre-Death Leopard, before Death Leopard became Death Leopard, man. They're just amazing on this song. You know, and I was curious if the song got played in concert. And it said 520 times between 1983 and 1984, and then all but forgotten after that, except for in Sheffield, their hometown, 2023, they played this song, is what it said. So,
very cool.
Wow. Go look at the set list overseas compared to America for these bands, and it'll make you cry, because they play so many different tracks overseas. America is mostly just greatest hits, because these people in America only hear the greatest hits. If you don't play Sugar in concert, they get you a fucking conniption, man. So, anyways.
Well,
didn't mean to drop the F-bomb.
The E tag. I'll say, you know, it made me look it up, because I was trying to. I think I found the show that we went to.
Oh, I found the sound list too. I had it brought up as well.
Yeah, I was wrong. I mean, I think I'm thinking of another Hit and Run that was on High and Dry, wasn't it?
Yes.
Wait.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
I thought we went to the 18 show. Was it 16?
No, it was way before that.
Now, I saw him in 88 with Tesla. No,
I think it's 2007 is what I'm looking at.
Oh, no, I'm thinking about the last time we saw him out in the yard.
Our backyard?
We saw Def Leppard outside with Journey. Do you remember that, Chris?
Yeah.
That was Ronnie, right? I wasn't with you for that, I don't think.
Oh, I thought you came with us for that.
I don't think you were at the show that...
No, I didn't go to 2007. Right. No.
Yeah,
I
went that was
2018.
Okay.
I saw him with Chris.
But you're right. I think it's most primarily Hysteria. I mean, like Rocket Animal. Here's the set list. Rocket Animal, Excitable, Fool and Mirror Mirror, Another Hit and Run, Love Bites, Rock On, Two Steps Rock Behind, on. Bringing On the Heartbreak, Switch 625, which, you know, good instrumental. Hysteria, Armageddon, That Photograph, Pour Some Sugar On Me, and they close with Rocket Ages. So,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, look at their set list overseas sometime. They're always a little bit different, it seems like. So, but see, the Sheffield show was amazing because that's their hometown.
Playing,
so,
yeah, I'm sure they're playing their classics for sure.
Playing a lot of stuff I'd like to hear live. But
wow. All right. Let's go ahead and go to track number 8. It's called Rocks Off. Hit it, Chris. Hold on to your pants, boys. This is going to get fun. All right. Okay. The one thing that makes this song a step above mediocre for me was the guitar riff. The guitar trade-off between Steve Clark and Pete Willis is absolutely phenomenal. The song showcases harmonic trade-offs. The killing point of this song is the mix is absolutely abysmal. There's a section in this song where the panning from left to right is so bad. It needed to be corrected, and I cannot believe that this would allow to be on the final mix of this song. It's horrible. I think Chase could do better on the mix. I'm not even gonna lie. I got a 11-year-old son that can mix this better. He streams online, and I promise you, he can mix this song better. I don't know what they were thinking when they did this. But that being said, even with all the negative thoughts and shortcomings in production, the song itself has promise and is still very good to my ears. It's just that one section I cannot get out of my mind, and it pisses me off. I gave it a 6. Chris, what did you think about Rocks Off?
Yeah, I didn't even have that in my notes, but I agree 100%. You're right, man. It's almost like one of them was probably doing some drugs and bumped the soundboard or something.
Go
it's just
to
like,
the left.
He's like,
it's like, go to left. Man, I mean, like, that's Bush League. I don't disagree. And I can't believe it. That hadn't been fixed with like a re-release or something after the fact, right?
That's the beauty of a debut album, man. It's just to get all those nice little quirks.
It's raw.
It's raw. It's absolutely raw. And you're right. It is a quirk. You're absolutely right, dude. I just can't believe that got missed. It's so elementary. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But my notes on this, man, instrumentally fantastic. And you're right. Like, I think I said Joe's kind of a background character in this song, is what I said. This is all about the guitars, man. And I think the playoff between you know, Pete and Steve, they just rock the hell out of this song. I gave it a 7, but it's not because of Joe, it's because of those guys. And I did notice, I was like, it really hit me as like Mutt Lang would have never let this happen. He's always got Joe in the forefront. They let the previous producers, some guy, I can't remember, Colonel or something or other, I don't know. Let these guys play, man, and he just let them jam, and they don't jam after this, really, man. Once Mutt gets there, there's some good guitar solos, but it's not like jam sessions like this is on some of these songs.
Oh, it's coming.
Guitar-wise, it's fantastic, so I gave it a 7. It's hard, but I agree with that, where it switches channels. Man, that's just terrible. I don't know who did that.
That was the worst panning ever in the history of rock.
I mean, I could sit here with Audacity and make it sound better now. I know I could, man.
All right. Anthony, what did you think about Rocks Off?
Yeah, this is probably one of those albums where this band was really fresh. And they're like, we need to get this band on record. Who can produce this thing? You can produce it? Go produce it. You know, that's probably what was that kind of record.
Some dude in the corner out.
Actually, Anthony, I think
drunk in the corner out there.
They only had a little bit of money. They went to the place they could afford to do this, and they didn't get to pick who produced it. They had to go with what they had.
Talent always shines through, man. So.
Oh, yeah.
It does.
Guitar-wise, that's what saved the song in my ears, is these guys are absolutely just destroying it. It's awesome.
You know, even with all that said, I still gave it an 8. I still think it's an excellent tune. I think there's just a lot of life in this song that I love. It's high octane. It's upbeat. Band is on point. Rick's killing it on drums again. I mean, the dude, like I said, he's an amazing drummer now and will always be. But, man, to hear him in his prime when he had both arms before the accident, he was going to be a top 10 drummer of all time if he would have kept two arms. I guarantee you, man. The dude was a kid at this point in time. So, and this just proves it, man, how strong he was as a drummer. But, it's just, it's an A for me, so I really do like this song. But
Fair enough. Let's move it up to track number 9. It's called It Don't Matter. So, It Don't Matter, the opening riff, it reminds me of Slow Ride. I'm not sure if it's the guitar tone, the bass line, or the riff itself, but I can't get that out of the back of my head. And that's not a bad thing. I do dig that tune. The song is absolutely catchy. It can get stuck in your head. I'm surprised this one wasn't a single. On that same note, during the chorus, there seems to be no excitement in Joe's voice. It's almost depressing. It's weird. Like, he has this power throughout his singing, but when he gets to the chorus, it's like, it don't matter, it don't matter. I'm like, what? I don't understand.
It's almost
like
it don't matter
it.
To him, you know, like
it really doesn't. And maybe it's because this album, it's their first album, and this is might have been something they wrote quickly in the studio. I don't know, but that's what hurts this song the most. If they would fix the vocal line in the chorus itself, the song would be excellent. I can only imagine what this would sound like live. I think it would rock, especially with today's lineup. I could see a crowd getting into this, but with all the shortcomings, I still find the song to be very good. I gave it a 6. Chris, what do you think about It Don't Matter?
You know, I'm going to retroactively pull my sleeper from Wasted and put it on this now that I know that Wasted was a big hit by these guys. I love the riffage on this, man. Seriously, the guitars on this are fantastic.
The guitars are awesome, man.
I think you're wrong, personally. I think Joe sounds awesome in this. I think the background vocals are really good. I don't get any lethargic, you know, feelings from Joe on this. I feel like he's doing a great job on this song.
How do you not
know
that?
The guitar solo, really good. I like the way they kind of like use the slide guitars in this and stuff. Awesome song. I gave it an 8, man. I think it's excellent.
Wrong. Okay, Anthony, go ahead and tell us what you think about It Don't Matter.
I think Anthony didn't agree with me.
I'm sure he was going to say.
Well, let me take a sidebar 1 second, real quick.
Oh, God.
I was looking up something on blabbermouth.net, and where did it go? God. These stupid ads. Joe Elliott is actually saying here that they are not a metal band in this interview. He said, on being lumped in with new wave of British heavy metal bands, lumping us in with Iron Maiden, Joe Elliott said, was as ridiculous as lumping us in with Depeche Mode. And we spent 20-odd years trying to tell the world that the ads are getting in my way, but telling the world that we're not a British heavy metal band. So that's where I heard it at, I think. So I was trying to read that, but that...
Blabbermouth is horrible for ads, dude. I was
trying to read
that
article, and it kept popping out. Anyways, that's what I...
They're terrible, dude. They're terrible.
I was just curious if my memory was correct, so I wanted to make sure I was on record as being correct.
I mean, the information is probably good, but the way they set that website up is ridiculous, man.
Depending on the score you give, Anthony, I'll tell you if you're correct or not, because obviously Chris was not.
I think it's a 7 for me. It's a great tune. It's band is on point. Guitars and vocals are strong. Killer harmonies, catchy chorus. It has a very 70s rock vibe to it all over it, which I really hear a lot. So
that opens that mix, this, though, man.
That mix especially is that 70s mix is all over this one, you know. So, it's a killer tune. It's a good tune, man. I really do like it.
Disappointed, Anthony. I thought you were going to come in high on this one like me.
It's a 15.
Listen to this. Listen to this riff again, man. It's opening riff.
The riff is fine. Play his chorus. Play him singing the chorus. Turd.
The riff is amazing. Don't get me wrong.
Man, that rocks, man.
It's a great tune. It's a great tune.
Exactly. All right. Let's go to the song Answer to the Master. Hit it, Chris. So Answer to the Master, strong bass line yet again. Rick is basically showing off at this point. I'm gonna go ahead and say it. I think he must have been part of the production team. He's like, F him, I'm on this one. I mean, that's all I can say, because that bass line is prominent throughout this whole song. Even with that being said, the song showcased everything that Def Leppard does great, including a drum solo and a ripping guitar solo in this tune. With all the talent on display, the song still falls a little bit short, but it's still somewhere between very good and great. I gave this one a 6.5, just so that I wouldn't have Satan's corner here with 3 6s. All right, Chris, what'd you think about Answer to the Master?
He's the antithesis of what happened with Metallica there on the one album. What's the one that the bass is completely gone from?
Are you talking about
Justice for All.
Yeah, it's like the complete opposite of that. Nah, this is the first thing. Actually, I was listening to my headphones. I wrote bass prominent. Yeah, man, like Savage is going off on this one. I got to give him credit. And it's a good, solid bass line, too, that he's throwing out there. Another one, man, instrumentally very good. A lot of twists and turns. Rhythm section is fantastic. Blazing guitar solo. Joe's pretty good job with it. I gave it 7. I think it's a great song.
Fair enough. Anthony, what do you think?
I feel like the back half of this album really grabbed me, maybe more than the front, which is crazy. I mean, I think it finishes strong, man. I really do.
Shut up. Go to number. I'm kidding. I'm joking. It's the back half was weaker for me. That's all. All right, Anthony, talk to us about Answer to the Master.
Yeah, I think it's a 7 for me, too. It's a great tune. I like the way this one comes in with that guitar. And then, once again, we treat it to just another solid tune by Def Leppard. I mean, the boys are still firing on all cylinders. Rick's killing it on drums once again. A bass is strong. Guitar. I mean, just name it. These boys were just at their prime, at their peak. Yeah, at the prime right here. And they're just about ready to explode into this world. And you can just hear it all over this album. And I think it's part of the reason why I love this album so much is just to hear. It's like Metallica's Kill 'Em All. Just hear that rawness, that first, like, we're going to take on the world kind of sound. I love it so much. But it's a great tune, man. It really is. Yeah.
True metal, Joe, if you're listening. Just like we're comparing this to Kill 'Em All.
It's,
so
it's funny to me. It's funny to me.
Shouldn't there be in the same sentence?
Go ahead. It's funny to me that they don't cite a lot of these bands as influences. Like, they don't want to be part of the British wave of heavy metal.
Right.
So why did they put out an album like this at the time? Were they encouraged to do it because it was popular? You know what I'm saying? Or is this the best way to showcase their skills, their talents? I kind of wonder if they're more into Sweet and those glam bands back in the day, then why was this their first album that people heard? I'm always kind of curious about that. So, but Maybe it's-
I would dare say it's because it was blowing up, Anthony. That styling was blowing up. It was getting to America and getting huge amounts of radio play in that time frame. And those bands that were doing it so well that they were just making money. I mean, this is back when you release an album, you make money if it's sold. You know what I mean?
Right.
You got to think about the first two Maiden albums. They were tremendous sellers because album artwork mainly in the United States. That's what sold them. They didn't get to see it live as much. Right. And then all of a sudden, they brought their performance across. When Bruce Dickinson joined the band, holy crap, dude. You know, they really blew up.
Nonetheless. So maybe that's what it was. Maybe the producer behind the scenes says, you guys sound amazing, but you need to just pump it up a little bit and give it a little extra oomph because this is the sound that's popular.
It's possible, for sure, for sure.
But they held their own, man. Can't give them credit.
All right. Now that we've answered to the master, let's go to the final track. It's called Overture. Hit it, Chris. So Overture, time to close out the album. It's not quite what I expect as a closing song after the previous three songs that I just had to endure based on the mediocrity. In the mediocrity compared to the first half of the album. That's what I mean, okay?
I wouldn't say endure, though. Let's not say endure. It's not a good word.
This song takes it all for the final 7 minutes, so to speak. All right, so, I mean, this is a long ride. It's 7 minutes. I can already hear Chris screaming at the stereo, please end. This is very prog rock, not quite the sound and tonality of what we normally would expect from a new wave of British heavy metal sound. However, once it kicks in, it absolutely rocks. The bass sound is pure Steve Harris worship, straight out of his playbook. This could be a Maiden song. This is my sleeper. Be. I think everything about this song works for my taste, and I don't believe Def Leppard has ever recorded another epic song like this, and it's a shame. This has so much going for it. They are exposing all their levels of talent throughout this song. Drums, bass prominently, and guitar. Excellent in every sense of the word. It's borderline outstanding. You probably wouldn't have to twist my arm to give it a 9. I'm at 8.5. Chris, what did you think about Overture?
But you know, you're right. I normally don't care for long songs, but I'm going to be like Anthony on this one. It didn't feel that long to me. It just like was a complete jam. No, seriously. it was a complete jam session. I just wrote again, like bass prompt. I didn't realize Savage. I was hearing it through my head. I was like, it's going on constantly in the background. Man, I love the way they just switch guitar, you know, back and forth on that. I mean, it's just a huge jam session to end the song. You know, vocally, Joe sounds good. I won't say there's a whole lot of a chorus on this one, but I think he sounds great when he sings it. Primarily it's the instrumental again, and again something Mutt Lange would never allow, probably. It's, you know, he's like, we need Joe at the forefront, we don't need these guys playing multiple guitar solos on a song. But I love it. I think it's great, and I think it's an excellent closer for the album. I gave it an 8, man. Yeah.
All right, Anthony, what'd you think about it?
It didn't feel like it's 7:44. I mean, it does not feel that long. Do y'all think?
No, yeah. I think it's an epic. I think it's an epic ride, and I absolutely love
it's great.
It
it's great, it could way to close it, man.
Yeah, probably my favorite.
Everybody's got their part on this song, and they all do a fantastic job with it.
Agreed.
Yeah. I was trying to think of some epic songs. Do you know White Lightning was about 7 minutes long? I think it was on Adrenalize, if I'm not mistaken. That might have been their that one. They have a couple more beyond this. Gods of War, I think.
I will see. Gods of War is a great song. It's
close to six, I think. So they have a few, but you know, this one definitely has more of that epic sort of 70s Rush kind of Yes sort of proggy sort of build to it, like a lot of these bands did. You know, I do like the acoustic intro, followed by the bass and Joe's vocals. I like the way that comes in. They blend those three together very well. The harmonies, the ebbs and flows, the way the song builds. You know, it's got all those layers to it, like the 70s mixes and early 80s mixes have. This song kicks in. We're treated to high octane once again. Excellent way to close an album. I gave it an 8, man, so digging this one a lot. So
awesome.
It's definitely
awesome.
A highlight on the album.
Once I had my notes on that, was it kind of sounded like Boston's More Than a Feeling when it started there. I don't know if you guys got that.
Good call on that one. All right, guys, so final thought time. First of all, for a first album, this is not a bad ride at all. The key thing, it's the humble beginnings of a great band. Although the music writing is not there, and it's not quite the same as you see in future releases, the greatness is sprinkled throughout this record. You ain't going to get the famous songs that they're known for. And this is what makes it tough for me to recommend this for a listener to go to listen to this record if they're not familiar with Leopard. If you're familiar with Leopard, absolutely go back and give this one a listen. You'll see the humble beginnings and what the greatness really was and what got them started. If you're new to Def Leppard, I'm going to go ahead and steer clear of this album initially. You'll want to listen to the Pyromania, the Hysteria, the Adrenalize, that era first, which I think is their greatest era, arguably the greatest era.
High and Dry.
High and Dry is great. I got nothing against
it.
High
and Dry belongs on that list too.
It's
right there with Pyromania, I think.
I think they're very similar. I think it is a stepping stone. It goes from this to that stepping stone, and then they get to this plateau.
It's a big step between this and High and Dry. Yeah.
It's a huge step between High and Dry and Pyromania. Huge step. You can argue it all you want, but I'm telling you right now, Pyromania is a different
level. High and Dry is really good.
It is good, but Pyromania is one of those albums that would be almost a damn 10.
Well, honestly, what I would tell people if they want to get into Leopard, not to cut you off, but do you want heavy Leopard or pop Leopard? And if you want heavy Leopard, I would say Pyromania down to get started. And if you want pop Leopard, I'd say Hysteria through Adrenalize, maybe Euphoria, because that one kind of got a little poppy too. So they're a strange band where they kind of got at certain eras you can, you know, pop into. So it depends where you really want to start. So,
but anyways, in my heart, the era is Pyromania.
All right, I've got to say. We need to a universal ban on the word eras on this. We don't need to be referencing Taylor Swift on this podcast, so let's just like leave that alone.
she's hot right now. Let's just throw Taylor Swift and Travis
Kelce
out there.
Let's not jump on the eras bandwagon, please.
It's got ugly. I don't know what just happened. All right. Anyway.
Sorry, Jimmy.
Actually, before Jimmy gets back to it.
Let's keep interrupting Jimmy on his final thoughts.
Tim McGraw played with Taylor Swift for that one song, that duet. Well, Tim McGraw actually duetted with Death Leopard on a song. So we got a little tie-in with Taylor Swift and Death Leopard right there.
Well, you know, actually, Toby Keith kind of had something to do with founding her. And, you know, he just passed recently.
He did find her. I think he's the one that discovered her, or at least signed her first. I don't know. Nonetheless, can I get back?
Finish,
can
Jimmy.
I finish?
Finish.
Before you, no, it's good.
Oh my God, this is never.
You just start
end.
Over. You can, man.
I don't need to because my words are absolutely mishmash at this point. It's not worth it. All right. Anyway, as I was saying, I think for a casual fan, I would say no. But for a fan seeking out the beginnings and watching the transformation to what the greatness Def Leppard becomes, absolutely grab this thing. My overall was a 7.3. I'm good with that. I think it's an absolute great way to start a band out, and I enjoyed it. This is absolutely fantastic listen. So, thumbs up. Chris, final thoughts.
Yeah, it was an interesting pick. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say most of the people that listen to this podcast are already pretty familiar with Def Leppard. I think there's probably a whole lot of people in our age range who grew up listening to Hysteria and Pyromania at the very least. So I would say it's absolutely worth the listen for them, if anything, for like a historical kind of frame of reference on this band, because you really see their beginnings on this and how they got started. It was definitely unpolished compared to, you know, once Mutt gets there and kind of takes over. But I will say, like, there's some rocking songs. And unlike you guys, I honestly, look, okay, I get The biggest hits are on the first half, even though side two starts with Wasted. So
it's a rock.
I will say that I honestly think side two is, for me, a little better than side one. I really think it is. Because I thought it finished strong, man. Overture is a great way to close the album. I really liked It Don't Matter. Answer the Master rocks off. All those are decent songs, man. And like, I kind of felt like the place where it sloughed off a little bit was like right after Sorrow as a Woman. Like It Could Be You, Satellite, When the Walls Came Tumbling Down. Those were all kind of in my low spot, man. So like, for me, I almost think side two is just a little bit better than side one on this album. But that's just me.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I think the things I will say before Mutt got involved with this band, that the instrumentally these guys were allowed to shine. And Joe sounds good, don't get me wrong, but there are times when he just he's not the forefront of it, you know. It's like, it's more like a jam session, and Pete and Steve are throwing it back to each other. Savage is going off on the bass. I mean, he absolutely goes off at times on the bass. And like Anthony said, Rick Allen, when he had two arms, man, one of the best drummers out there. So I think these guys instrumentally really shine on this album. Maybe more than I've heard on other albums, because I feel like it's more pop centric when you get to like the Hysteria days. So we get like a historical baseline for these guys, if you will, on this album. And I really think for that alone, anybody who likes the kind of music we like, I would recommend, hey, at least give it one listen. Just listen all the way through, see what these guys sound like, because I really think there's some great like riffs on this album, and you know, the rhythm section carries it a lot of times. I think they do a great job. So overall, mine was a 7.2 when I rounded it up. That may not be 100% accurate. I did bump a couple songs when I was listening to it through my headphones, but it's around 7.2, I think.
Fair enough. Anthony, what are your final thoughts?
Yeah, I'm glad we dove into it. I'm glad you guys did enjoy it. I knew Jimmy probably had a lot of history with it more than Chris, so I'm glad Chris actually got some good enjoyment out of it. Yeah. I think it's just always fun to go back and see where Def Leppard got their start. I've always really enjoyed this album, but it's one of those albums that I found it kind of hard to review because I've kind of found I just like to get lost in it. I don't like to pull apart the songs. I like to just kind of turn it on and let it play. And yeah, it was a little harder for me at times to rate some of these songs because they flip-flopped around for me so much because I just don't know how to rate a lot of them. But it's a killer tune, man. It's a sound they don't really get back to. They tried this sound again on Songs from the Sparkle Lounge in 2008, which is a pretty solid album, too, if you ever want to give a little harder sound to get the Def Leppard. That's a good one to dive back into. They duet with Tim McGraw on that one, which is a strange duet, but it works. Tim holds his own with them. So, and he's played, they played with Taylor Swift, too, at that Crossroads that CMT used to do. Remember that CMT used to do? That was Taylor Swift and Def Leppard did that Crossroads together. So there's another tie-in with Taylor Swift.
What in the world did they sing with Taylor Swift back in those days?
That's back I bet. Because Crossroads. Think about it.
Crossroads, yeah. But she did, I think she did Pour Some Sugar on Me or Photograph with Them, something like that. It was really solid, man. So check that out if you could. But anyways.
Pour Some Sugar, man. That's my cherry pie for these guys. I can't stand that damn song, I'm just to be honest.
It's not my favorite by them, but I know what it means for them. But, you know, that song, surprisingly, in concert is very heavy. When you see this band in concert, those songs from Hysteria are a lot heavier in concert than they are on the record. So, but anyways, my final rating is an 8 even. That's where it came out to be, which is excellent. And I'm more than fine with that because, like I said, I've been a fan of this one for a bit. And it's probably my favorite album cover by him, so I do like this one a lot. So
it does have a cool album cover. I agree with you.
Yeah. And you know,
hint of Boston to it.
Yes,
with the guitar. Speaking, on it, you know,
speaking of Pyromania, that was my first ever cassette. My first thing I really ever bought music wise was Pyromania back in the day. So I think it's why this band has always had such a sweet spot for me. They were like, I keep thinking back to the bands I first kind of knew about, like Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil. I remember seeing that early on. Master of Puppets by Metallica. That was my early introductions, and Pyromania was right there at the forefront, you know, and been with the band off and on ever since. So
that's a good awesome first cassette, yeah, man. At least you didn't get it's a dud, you know what cassette. I mean?
It seems like me and my brother pulled our money together and bought that one, something like
mine
that.
Mine was probably like Britney Fox or something like that.
There's no way to know that's the first album.
We need to bring some Britney Fox on the pod, man.
No, we don't.
We need a month of Britney.
You know what I will say?
Danger, danger, Tora, Tora.
It might be kind of like when we were thought we were going to goof on the Bullet Boys, and it turned out to be actually a pretty solid album. So who knows? It might be like that.
I listened to that one with Girls School recently, and it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's definitely a Cinderella clone, though. It's like they're cloning Cinderella.
Those guys were in Cinderella, some of those guys, actually, yeah.
That lead singer is so Tom Kiefer.
It's a long way to love, though.
Yeah.
It is.
Girls' long school. Way. Broke all the rules at the girls' school.
Oh, Lord. I love it. I love it. All right, guys. I say we get ready to wrap this thing up. Anthony, what you got going on this week?
Chris has got to make a pick,
doesn't he? Good Lord. Y'all done got me all discombobulated.
And in this corner, weighing in at 165 pounds, it's the blues rock guru, the master of podcast production, and the man who cannot stop the battery. It's Chris's pick.
So I'll say that we're going to, and I've already kind of tipped these guys off since we had to cancel last week. I was going to give everybody a couple of weeks to listen to what I was going to pick. So we did a deep dive of this band a couple of years ago, but for some reason this album was not available at the time. I don't know what was going on. It was a copyright thing or what, but it is now. And so I'm going to go back to 1979. The band is ZZ Top. And the album is called, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Duguelo. And it's got some pretty good songs on it. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to give it a couple spins yet.
I've listened to it.
I think Anthony's going to love that Maniac Mechanic song. Something tells me that's going to be right up his alley.
But, now, that one song, what's with the beautician in the back? What's that song? Bad Nationwide.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a great song.
To see like him ride down the road in a big pimped-out Cadillac with the first steering wheel. And
That song, I used to listen to this sports talk radio show like every day. It's based out of Nashville. And that was their bumper music, that song. And when they used to play it, I didn't know what it was. I was like, my God, what the heck is that? And I Shazammed it one day, and I was like, oh, this is ZZ Top. And I realized, but man, that's a great, that song has kind of like a special place for me because of that, honestly, because I used to listen to that show daily. So
yeah,
awesome, can't wait. Killer stuff. All right, Anthony, what do you got going on this week, man?
Song lines and tan lines. I just dropped the big bonus mega Key West episode, if you guys haven't seen that yet. It's all five of my episodes strung together for that I did about Key West. Little tribute to Toby Keith at the start. I did a piece of work him and Jimmy did together. Both are gone now, which is crazy to think about. And then I close with a great Key West song by Scott Kirby, We Own Key West, on that one. If you get to the end of it, it's an hour and a half. So if you get to the end of it.
Wow.
And I'm putting together a little Patreon podcast that I'm hoping maybe I can start putting out some subscription episodes too. So
So you did five episodes and combined them into one? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I did five episodes. Before I went to Key West, I did about five episodes kind of. Well, no, I did one before I went to Key West. I did four after I got back. Gotcha. And I kind of just strung them all together and tied them in together. So got that. So anyways, that's cool. Man. So Song Lines and Tan Lines, if you want to check that out. And Studio 666, if you like the Foo Fighters, highly recommend that movie. Me and Jimmy have all talked about it.
Classic.
And
bloody.
Last thing, yeah, it's very bloody. So if you don't like blood and gore, don't watch it. Super Bowl. Who's got the picks? Anybody got picks Super Bowl this weekend? Put them on record right now.
I think the NFL will make sure the Chiefs win.
You think so?
I would dare say, yeah, they're probably going to win by, I don't know, a touchdown.
Yeah, I'm kind of rooting for the Niners.
They got to have Taylor down there on the field during the presentation.
Keep
all the Swifties watching. Yeah,
yeah, we'll see.
Driving money to that industry.
But at the same time, Mahomes is a next level player, man. That dude, I haven't seen a few play the game like he plays the game. So
he's something, all right. I'll give him that.
My heart's with the Niners, but I think my head's saying the Chiefs too. So
Niners are the biggest surprise, I think. I did not expect him to be there this year.
I'd like to see Brock Purdy get that ring with the last player picked in the NFL draft. Or I don't think he was picked, was he? One of the two.
Yeah, he was Mr. Irrelevant.
Yeah.
I think he was Mr. Irrelevant that year.
Yeah. And wow. Christian McCaffrey, like to see him get a ring too. He's a heck of a player. So, anyways.
We'll see how it goes, boys.
Just thought I'd throw that out there since Super Bowl weekend's this weekend.
Oh, yeah. All right, boys, let's wrap this thing up. For the Audible Ecstasy Podcast, this is Jimmy.
This is Chris.
This is Anthony.
And this is it.